Timothy McVeigh will be executed on Monday at the federal penitentiary in Terre Haute, Indiana. A 3-judge appeals panel yesterday rejected his petition for a stay, and he has decided to abandon all further appeals. More than 300 witnesses, some at the death house and many others watching closed-circuit TV, will see him die. It would likely be a quiet death. Sodium pentothal puts the condemned to sleep, then another drug paralyzes the body. Finally, potassium chloride stops the heart. Lethal injection has become the execution method of choice in most states with the death penalty. It is the latest in an historical movement towards so-called humane methods of execution. NPR's Renee Montaigne reports.
Bring up the subject of humane executions, and those who are against the death penalty will immediately argue that it is a contradiction in terms. Yet the urge to spare the condemned gratuitous pain, in fact, started with the first champions of abolishing the death penalty. In the mid-1700s, criminals were still being executed for such crimes as robbing a rabbit, Warren. More enlightened thinkers emerged in the years leading up to the American and French revolutions, some arguing that the state did not have a right to take a life. Much influenced by these ideas was physician and leader of the French Revolution, Joseph Ignace Guillotin.
Dr. Guillotin, who opposed the death penalty, developed this machine that would dispatch people to the hereafter with great speed and with, it was thought, very little pain.
Michael Radelet is a sociology professor at the University of Florida. He says Dr. Guillotin believed that if there must be a death penalty, it should be as humane as possible. And Guillotin was appalled when his name became synonymous with a bloody, gruesome death. Still, says Professor Radelet, Guillotin's guillotine was a radical departure from the centuries-old notion that punishment was supposed to be cruel.
And there's any number of methods that people used to make it more cruel. Sometimes, literally, a person would be tortured over a series of days, sometimes force-fed water so that he would stay alive so that he could be tortured longer. One just very typical example was a person could be pressed to death, put in between two boards, and they would put increasingly heavy boulders on the top board. It was like making a sandwich with the condemned inmate on the inside. In those days, the sole justification of the death penalty was deterrence. And it was thought that the more severe the punishment, then the greater the deterrent effect.
By the American Revolution, though, the notion of humane punishment had sufficiently taken hold among enlightened thinkers that America's founders put into the Constitution a ban on cruel and unusual punishment. By the early 1800s, hanging became the standard method of execution.
The hanging became more scientific, where executioners were actually writing books or manuscripts describing how far the drop should be. You wouldn't want it too long of a drop because the person's head would fall off, or too short of a drop because then the person would strangle rather than having his or her neck broken.
This sort of thinking produced a handful of American figures in the tradition of Dr. Guillotin. An Illinois cattle breeder by the name of Phil Hanna was one such character. Phil Hanna billed himself as a, quote, noose-adjusting specialist. For decades into the 1930s, he traveled from his farm in Illinois to states throughout the region, conducting humane hangings at no charge to local authorities. Perry Ryan is author of The Last Public Execution in America, about a hanging in Owensboro, Kentucky. He says Phil Hanna conducted 70 or so hangings, but always refused to be called a hangman.
He didn't actually pull the lever on the scaffold, but he did build the scaffold, which was portable. He did adjust the noose. He instructed the condemned person on what to do when he reached the scaffold. As a humanitarian, probably not what we think of as a humanitarian today, but perhaps he was motivated by a sincere desire to minimize suffering.
Others looked to a new, more modern technology to take the suffering and the spectacle out of being executed, electrocution.
That's right. The electric chair is one of America's first electric appliances, long before the waffle maker or the microwave.
The first person to be executed in the electric chair was in 1890. Michael Radelet says electric power was so new at the time that its use in electrocutions came about as an odd and unintended consequence of the fierce rivalry between Thomas Edison and the Westinghouse Company. A proponent of direct current, or DC, Thomas Edison wanted to convince people that Westinghouse's alternating current, or AC, was dangerous.
The Edison people actually got one of Westinghouse's AC generators and they took it around from place to place in the late 1880s, sometimes to county fairs, executing animals. So somebody looked at that and said, well, gee, if it's that easy to kill a dog or a pig, why don't we do it on a prison inmate? And with a little bit of urging from the Edison people, the verb in those days was not to be electrocuted, it was to be Westinghoused.
At the dawn of the 20th century, the electric chair quickly overtook hanging as the most acceptable form of execution, and with good reason, says Georgia's chief medical examiner, Dr. Chris Sperry.
The best evidence that exists to indicate that people who are judicially executed never feel any conscious pain or suffering rests in the tens of thousands of people who have sustained accident electrocutions and have survived. None of those people can ever remember the event if the current goes through their head. I've used the analogy in some of the testimony I've given of a sandcastle being hit by a tidal wave, that consciousness is obliterated instantly when the current has passed through the body because the amount of the current is so very, very great.
Still, electrocutions can and are botched. For instance, twice in the last 10 years, witnesses in Florida were horrified to see flames shooting up from the heads of men being electrocuted there. The sometimes ghastly nature of electrocution, says sociology professor Michael Radelet, meant that almost as soon as electrocution was embraced by the criminal justice system, it was overtaken by something else.
In the early 1920s, people thought that electrocutions were too gross. So there's yet another new method introduced, and that was the gas chamber, asphyxiation. That was supposed to be a humane alternative to the electric chair and also to hanging. And indeed, as it was originally conceived, the inmate would not even be told when she or he would be executed. Instead, the asphyxiations were supposed to work with the prison officials going down to the cell in the middle of the night when the person is sound asleep, and all of a sudden hitting that person with gas, and they would die without even knowing which end is up. It didn't work too well because they quickly realized that the gas would take out the executioners as well as other prisoners, so they did move to the gas chamber.
The gas chamber did offer one big advantage over all previous forms of execution, says Michael Radelet. It didn't disfigure the body. And this was a new concern that emerged in the 20th century among those who cared and thought about execution methods, sparing the public from the horrors of executions. Which is why, say experts, 36 states have now adopted lethal injection, a method that appears to put the condemned to sleep, never to wake up again. Scott Christensen is author of the book Condemned: Inside the Sing Sing Death House.
It is also intended to be more, quote, humane for the juries to make their judgments, finding people guilty and sentencing them to be executed, and also for the people who are carrying it out and for the witnesses who must witness an execution.
Still, says Richard Dieter, director of the Death Penalty Information Center,
there is this counter trend that the death penalty should also be harsh. And there's still remnants of that. There's still resistance to getting rid of the electric chair. You know, there's still a sense that the death penalty should hurt. It's that ambivalence that I think we've had about the death penalty that creates these sort of strange mixes of strange methods, and yet we keep to the death penalty even though we find it to be problematic.
Which is why sociologist Michael Radelet believes the search for new methods will go on.
If we have the death penalty in 10 or 15, 20 years, I'm sure that we'll be debating some alternatives to lethal injection. It might be death by lasers.
Or some technology that hasn't been invented yet. Renee Montaigne, NPR News.